broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
But the fact is, we're going to spend $500 million
in the... He's not getting what he deserved. If anything...
Me first.
Really?
Yeah. When Casey came back from school, then he showed me the video.
And he pulled his pants down?
What the hell are you talking about?
Yeah! Woo! World famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch. Radio for patriots by patriots. Let me tell you something about this show. We go places other talk shows wish they could and they can't. Every night here, man. And join us tonight as well as online at philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com with live streaming video and live streaming audio of the show right now. We have a live video. It's a Phil TV in HD up right now. And for those of you watching on the video cast this evening, that beautiful scene behind me is El Pacifico. That's the that was actually recorded earlier today, as if you didn't know, because it's sort of a sunset scene. And there you see a little fishing boat tearing along the wake, the waves there. And there's that oil rig that we talk a lot about, and Santa Rosa Island. So that's the beach there. And that was videoed from the very top floor of our studios here, the El Pacifico Studios here at El Pacifico. 877-876-PHIL is the number, 877-876-PHIL. And, of course, our affiliate spotlight this evening. And we center that at a brand-new affiliate in Vero Beach, Florida, WTTB, 1490 AM. And our great affiliate, WCFO, 1160 AM in Atlanta, Georgia. Great affiliates all. Here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Now, we've had a story of students walking out of a class to rally for a football coach who is charged with child abuse, and we had another story of students rallying behind a teacher who's been accused of sexual harassment of a colleague. And in this case, it's here in, it isn't. It's in Kansas City, Missouri. It is at Calmet High School in Kansas City. And on the line right now with me is John Derunian, who is a teacher there at the high school. And, John, how are you this evening?
Very good, thank you.
And you are a teacher at the high school level there. You're a, what class do you teach?
Well, Phil, I teach a combination of a number of classes. I teach... not only in our math department, I teach trigonometry and calculus. I teach some of the advanced algebras to our freshmen. And I'm also on staff as a counselor, and I'm also on staff as athletic coach for our tennis team. So I do a lot of things, and I hope I do them well.
And you had the great, I guess, distinction of being a part of a program that has been inaugurated there at Calmet High School. That is the Teacher Debate Series?
Yes. The Teacher Debate Series is a series of debates between members of the faculty for the benefit of the students. And it's a way of educating the students on the technique of debate, on the different formats of debate, and as well as the issues that the students themselves are going to be studying. So it encompasses a wide variety of the different topics and subjects that we're going to deal with in our current events classes and our history classes. And
but it does feature teachers debating each other.
But yes, it does. Now we have, of course, our student debating club. But this is a way of giving the students a look at experienced debaters, which I was on a debate team and was a part of a debate society for a number of years. And Mrs. Ganther was as well.
Now, this is the lady we're talking about. Her name is Suzanne Ganther?
Samantha Ganther.
Samantha Ganther. The two of you had a debate.
We did.
And tell me about it.
The debate that we had was about the so-called school bullying issue in Australia, and it was between these two boys, the Casey Haynes and the Richard Gale, and I had taken the side of Casey Haynes, and that is to say, when I say I take the side of Casey Haynes, I took the side of this young man who was, to all appearances, minding his own business and was, in fact, on his way to some other point in the school when he was accosted by this other student and provoked into a fight. Susan took the side of Richard Gale. She said it was her point of view that this is a much more subtle situation of bullying, where this is a smaller boy, he might have been bullied by the other boys, and now he was fighting back, and it's possible that he was acting out in some way. So we debated this back and forth. And at the end of this debate...
Now, before you get going into too much detail, the two of you are debating this in front of students?
We did, yes. As part of the debate series.
As part of this debate series between teachers. You're taking the side of one boy, and she's taking the side of the other. Now, you're debating this in front of the students, and was this a forum... Was it extracurricular? In other words, was it during after-school hours?
No, this was during the school hours. It was part of a regular assembly that we have on Friday afternoons. And so the students get the last period off for this.
Okay. And what was the result of this debate, and how is it that the two of you wound up in conflict?
Well, the result was that she had won the debate, and I didn't think that she had. And we came back to class on Monday today, and I said to the class that I didn't feel I'd lost the debate. And that's what I told them about civil disobedience. And we got into a whole discussion about civil disobedience.
Why were you talking about civil disobedience?
Because it was raised by one of the students who said that what do you do when the system is not fair? Because the students felt that I had been unfairly treated in this debate, that I should have won the debate. And they felt like they wanted to make a statement. And I said, well, let me make the statement because I don't want anyone getting into trouble, and it'll be a lesson on civil disobedience. And... they said, fine. And I said to the students, watch me at lunchtime today in the school assembly, in the assembly area where we have lunch. And so my form of civil disobedience was to walk behind her and to grab her backside, if you want to say, or her buttocks and squeeze, and keep on walking. And she did not see me do it. She looked around and did not see who did it. She was obviously...
You walked up to her then, and you this was your form of civil disobedience, correct? To squeeze this woman, a private part of this woman's body. Now, how do you?
Well, when you talk about civil disobedience, Phil, there's a number of different ways of affecting civil disobedience. Civil disobedience is not a legal thing; it's an illegal thing, but it's done to protest a wrong or an injustice or an unjust law. And that's what I was more than anything, trying to communicate to my students.
But that's a form of sexual harassment, too, isn't it?
It's not a form of sexual harassment if the individual is anonymous and is doing it for purpose, and that is to say civil disobedience or a protest against a civil injustice. So we came back to class after lunch. As I told them, on your free period, please come back and let's talk about this. And they did.
And what class is this?
This is our history class, California history.
It's a California history class, and you take debating in this class?
Well, of course you debate any number of things in history classes as well as in political science. You debate historical events. You debate the significance. You debate the motives. You debate the effectiveness of... people's actions, and so that's what we do with our history classes.
All right, so you had walked up to this teacher, and I got to tell you something. You know, I don't know if this is something that students find funny. I don't know if it was something that you found funny, but you walked up and you did something juvenile, and you walked away.
No, it wasn't juvenile at all.
Well, and then you walked away, and you then assembled the class. And they all gave you kudos, as if that we had just pulled a really funny prank. And to me, it doesn't sound adult at all, and it doesn't sound like it's an effective way of teaching kids anything. How do you call that civil disobedience?
Well, you let me explain. I think I did explain, though, that this is an act that is.
It was an act of sexual harassment on this woman. Okay, now, look, I'm in favor of fewer and fewer constraints on human behavior if we can all afford them. But you're teaching your kids about so-called civil disobedience by walking up to a woman and squeezing her rear end.
Without her, this was an anonymous act, Phil.
All right, tell me why that's better than doing it and her knowing who.
I'll tell you why, because it is an act of civil disobedience. As an anonymous act, as an act of civil disobedience, and done in anonymity, it is absolutely a covert political act. It is to circumvent a law or a rule or a ruling, and to do it so that you are making a statement. You know that what you're doing is illegal, or is against the status quo, and yet you're doing it anyway.
Yeah, but if you look at the great civil disobedient acts of the past, let's, for instance, take in our own country the marches, the civil rights marches that willingly broke certain laws, these Jim Crow laws, there was no anonymity involved in any of that.
There was no anonymity involved in any of that, but there was still the anonymity of the crowd. There was only really one individual known to the authorities, and that was Martin Luther King, and the rest of the crowd cloaked in a sort of anonymity to be able to say, I do not believe in this system, and I'm going to protest it the best way I can by sitting at a lunch counter and getting covered in milkshake or food or whatever it was that was thrown at them. If you think about that, that's not very dignified either, Phil. So my walking up to Mrs. Ginther.
Hold on for a minute. I don't understand the comparison between people who are risking getting beaten at a lunch counter and having food thrown on them, and perhaps worse, and you walking up to this woman Ginther and pinching her butt or whatever you did. The story here is that you used your whole hand.
I did.
All right. How is that? You seem to be proud of this, and I'm having a very difficult time.
I'm proud of it because I was able to find an effective way of.
No, you already said an effective way of civil disobedience. But how is this something to be proud of when you're doing this in front of a class of kids? What has this got to do with the idea that you were unfairly treated in a debate?
I was unfairly treated in this debate because I'd won the debate, and
who were the judges of this debate?
Well, these were two individuals from the debating society. Both of them are student advisors, and both of them are capable people, but they're not, I would say, necessarily experienced debating society patrons. So I was treated unfairly. My students felt I'd won the debate, and they said that it was unfair. And they said to me, "Mr. Drainian, you won. What can we do? How can we protest this?" I said, "Civil disobedience."
And so walking up to this woman, and you know, teachers are supposed to be role models. You understand that?
Of course I understand that, Mr. Henry. I've been a teacher for 17 years, and I understand better than anyone that teachers are role models, and I taught my students.
Let me ask you a question. Do you see that as a foolish act?
I don't see it as a foolish act. I see it as the most effective way of protesting an unfair decision.
By walking up to this woman and grabbing a very private part of her body and squeezing without her knowing who did it, and in any other venue, if you'd been caught, you would have been accused of civil disobedience, wouldn't you? I mean, of sexual harassment.
Well, that's a Freudian slip, but let's let it go.
No, it's not a Freudian slip. I meant to say sexual harassment.
All right, it's sexual harassment if someone catches me, and so what I did is I did it incognito, made a very powerful statement against how I was unfairly treated.
But students may think it's all right to assault or harass women now. They may think that it's fine to, as a civil disobedient act, go up incognito without anybody knowing, with the girl's back turned, and squeeze her rear end or otherwise violate her person.
No, students are not going to do that. Students are going to find a far more effective way of protesting an unjust decision, Phil. This was a decision that I had lost in a debating society in a high school. It wasn't the end of the world, and yet we wanted to protest this. And knowing that we weren't going to overturn it.
But was it done as a joke?
It was not a joke, no. We felt that it was the most effective.
When you say we, what do you mean we?
Well, when I met with the students after class and I said, "What did you think?" And we were laughing, and they were giving me high fives, I think everybody recognized that it was the best way to protest this.
Walking up and squeezing a woman's rear end and then walking away.
In light of the injustice of being denied the victory in the debate and the fact that I was not being allowed any other alternative to protest it, then yes.
All right, we'll be right back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. And with me here is John Derunian, who's a teacher at Calumet High School in Kansas City, about losing a debate, protesting that debate loss by walking up to the teacher in question and squeezing her rear end in a crowd in front of his students who thought it was funny. And he doesn't think that people are going to look at that and be influenced by that, other students. 877-876-PHIL is the number, 877-876-7445. Next hour, State Senators Guy Barton and Kurt Quede on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
We can't fight this fight alone. Give us a call, 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445. Call the Patriot Hotline now, 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
World famous Phil Hendry Show here. On the line with me is John Derunian, as we talk here about this situation at his high school and the fact that they had a debate, he and another teacher named Samantha Gunther. If I'm getting the name right, I'm sorry.
No, the name is Ganther, Phil, and she's a member of the student advisory board. She's also a debating society member herself, and she's also our assistant principal. She is a very eminent teacher and a very good teacher, but as a debater, especially when we were debating this topic, which was school bullying, she is out of her element, and I was able to make a number of cogent points.
Oh no, I understand. You believe that you won the debate.
I won the debate going away. You can ask my students, who all said to me after class that, in varying ways, as students would, you know, Mr. Derunian, you were not treated fairly. So when we talk about this moment of civil disobedience, and you can't really say, well, look, I'm not going to have you kids walk out of class. We're not going to go down and storm the principal's office or however one might imagine those things are done. I said, we will act in a manner that is disobedient, that is a protest, and one that will allow us to continue our work day.
And so you went into the school, you went into the cafeteria.
Mr. Hendry, I'm not here to get approval from anybody. You asked me to come on the program and explain what happened.
No, but I don't think you've explained yet how it is you walk up to a woman and squeeze her rear end while she is standing there in line with her back to you, and you do this anonymously. How is she supposed to get the message that this is a protest against what happened in the debate?
Oh, she got the message all right. She was very familiar with the unhappiness of myself and my students. And I think I said to her, and I said in a kidding way, I said, you know, it's on now, and she laughed. And I said to her, it's on now, and about a half an hour later, she feels someone put his hand on her rear end and squeeze, and the connection, I think, is going to be very clear.
The connection she's going to make is very clear.
I believe so, yes.
Between a half an hour ago when you said it's on and her getting sexually harassed. 877-876-PHIL in Danville, Virginia, I believe it's Don. Go ahead, Don, you're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Hey, Phil, how you doing? I think that this guy is a sexual deviant using the loss of a debate to get his jollies with a woman in front of high school kids.
That I would expect people to think that.
I cannot understand any. You know your point. I just can't understand how you connect that with civil disobedience.
When the woman, I said to her, it's on, because she knew that she had unfairly won the debate. I had won the debate, and my students agreed with me. So I said that to my students, we need to protest this if that's what you want to do. So I went up, and I touched her in the manner that I've described. Now, for her not to know that that was a part of the debate. The thing that she completely forgot, you know, that what she forgot what we'd said.
Don't you think teaching your kids maybe to submit a protest with a debating committee would a, or
well,
something like that?
Would... Can I ask you, how much college have you did you go to? Because I'm talking about preparing kids for college, and this may not be a topic you understand.
How much college did I have?
Yes, sir.
4 years.
I doubt that.
Well, why don't you believe him?
Why don't you believe him? Because I don't pitch... I don't understand
don't
why
you
would
like
pitch...
You don't sound like you're college educated.
That's
Phil
nice.
Hendry. The Patriot Hotline, dial 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
877-876-PHIL here as we continue on. It's Monday, but it's the same old thing. Talking here with John Derunian, who is a high school teacher from Kansas City. And John, you were the loser of a debate that you said you won, and the form of protest was to grab a woman by her, let's just call it what it was, her ass, correct?
Yes, that's correct. That's correct.
And you feel that that is a form of civil disobedience?
Yes, I do. Absolutely. A form of civil disobedience that is the cornerstone of protest in this country and has been for a long time. And I wish that I could have made it something more eloquent. I wish it could have been storming the principal's office, but we didn't want to do that, and I didn't want to put the kids at risk. And I didn't want to get them in a situation where they were going to be in trouble.
Now, how do you know that this teacher is not listening to you tonight and is going to pick up the phone and call a sheriff or a police officer and say, well, this guy's just admitting on radio that he grabbed me by the rear end and hence sexually harassed me, and you're going to have a cop standing there tomorrow when you show up for school?
I don't think that's going to happen. I think... she's getting some notoriety out of this. I think the kid's got a little bit of a laugh out of it.
You don't think that this woman is being humiliated right now?
I don't think so. I think that what's happening is that I walked up to her in the lunchroom. I squeezed her on the rear end. I was put up to it by the students anyway, so I'm not going to be having to take the fall all by myself.
Hold on. You know, you're coming up with more and more reasons. You're not going to have to take the fall because why?
Because the students put me up to it. They said, what can we do? And I said, well, we can't storm the office. And I said, if I walk up and I squeeze her rear end, and they said, yeah, do that.
This is your idea of the students putting you up to it. You know, I got to tell you something. Your students are your charge, and you're doing something that is going to be, you know, obviously read by them as a legitimate form of civil disobedience, squeezing somebody's ass, and they're going to do it. And you don't seem to get that.
No, they're not going to do it, Bill, because that was a convenience. In the future, I think, endeavors, they're going to be able to have a far more healthy form of expression than walking up to a teacher and squeezing her ass. They just don't have that kind of outlook right now. But to go to your first point, which was, is she going to call the police? I know she's not going to call the police.
Well, you don't know that she's not going to call the police. You don't know that she's not going to be out there, you get a cop out there tomorrow and arrest you at the school. You're on the radio right now.
Well, again, she's getting some notoriety. I think that people's attention span, especially when it comes to the radio, is very limited. And I just don't think that it is the kind of situation that is, you know, I would say if she's listening right now, I would say, Samantha, don't do it. you're going to embarrass yourself. You're going to tell everybody, hey, I'm the one who got her rear end pinched by John Darunian, and you're just going to be embarrassed.
You're talking to her right now. You sound like a man who doesn't want to have the cops there.
No, I don't. If you want, Samantha, if you're listening right now, if you want to call the police, ma'am, come down and arrest me. You're welcome to do that.
877-876-PHIL. Here is Dean. Go ahead.
Oh, thanks, Phil. John, I've got a couple questions to ask. First, don't you think it would have been more appropriate to teach civil disobedience against the governing body that you say unfairly found that you had lost that debate, vice the opponent who she didn't make the decision or unfairly treat you?
I don't understand your question, Dean. Did you hear what this guy is saying? What are you asking him about that for?
Yeah.
What are you asking him that for? Are you listening to what the guy is saying? He said he walked up and pinched the woman on the ass.
I want to answer the man's question.
No, well, his question's stupid. His question is asinine. Yes, it is. You're asking this guy about why don't you go to the authorities and talk about it to the authority?
No, this guy sexually harassed
a woman. Are you listening to this?
Yes, I am. And please, I'm going to get to that.
No, I don't think you are.
Why would he attack the opponent in that debate in his so-called civil disobedience by going to the governing authority that he feels gypped him? Why would he instead take it out on the opponent?
Because she's a female and she was making a big deal out of winning, and she was lording it over everyone, and she was talking about how she won this, and she was talking about how she won that, and she thought she was pretty, she was something special.
This had little to do with civil disobedience and more to you taking her down a notch on her little totem pole, right?
Right. You just admitted something.
You wanted to demean her and debase her in front of those students because you felt like she was lording it over you that she won. You know what? She's the opponent. She won by judgment.
There is a civil disobedience against women. There's a civil disobedience against the woman
matriarch. You completely negated your other comment saying that you were going to protect the students and not let them get into trouble, that you were instead going to show them how to properly conduct civil disobedience, and then later you come down and say the students put you up to it. You know what, sir? You may not have to worry about that principal filing charges, because I believe most parents can make some kind of complaint with your school board and get you fired for it, which I hope they do.
It is civil disobedience against the matriarchal figure in our society that is continually given the benefit of the doubt against the male.
All right, this has got nothing to do with losing the debate. This was a sexual statement, a sexual political statement about a woman winning a debate.
Hey, John,
that's exactly what you just got done saying, man. You said it's a matriarchal thing because this gentleman pointed out if this was a legal thing, why would you go against her? Why wouldn't you go against the people that adjudicated or however they did it, judged her the winner?
If I could add one more thing before John answers that,
there's a small p as well as a large p in politics. The small p
John,
politics is I don't like her.
John, you stated earlier that under any other circumstance, a man grabbing a woman's butt would be considered sexual harassment, but your anonymity was what changed that legal standpoint. Well, what if someone had come up and punched her in the back of the head without her knowing who it was, or committed some other violent act against her without them actually knowing who it was? Does that make it not a crime? Does that make it not a crime because there's anonymity involved?
I didn't say that it isn't a crime. I said it is a crime, but how are they going to identify me?
The crime is not called civil disobedience. The crime is called sexual harassment.
There is the crime, but then there's a category of crime. You can commit murder, you can commit robbery, you can do all kinds of things. Are those crimes of civil disobedience? Or are those just acts of violence against society? Civil disobedience is a crime willingly committed by someone to make a political point, and so you're not denying you committed a crime, are you, Mr. Duranian?
Well, I mean, you put it that, I mean, that's not what civil disobedience is.
Yes, it is.
Well, then, no, I didn't commit a crime.
Yes, you did. You walked up and you pinched her in the ass. And now you're telling me you didn't?
I did, but I was anonymous.
All right, Dean, thanks very much.
In fact, it's a crime.
It doesn't. Thank you very much, sir. 877-876-PHIL. Are you now denying that what you did was civil disobedience?
I'm saying that it was civil disobedience, which means that it's not a crime, right?
No, I mean, you're a teacher and you don't know this? This reminds me of the night we had the guy on from the ACLU. The guy was a lawyer, and I knew more about international law than he did. You're telling me that you don't know what civil disobedience is?
I'm telling you that I do know what civil disobedience is. Civil disobedience is committing a crime, but doing it in a way that is peaceful and is not injurious to the point where it is no longer a crime.
Oh, get out of here, man. That's not what civil disobedience is.
That is exactly what it is. And that's why...
And that's why you pinching a woman on the ass as she's standing there minding her own business is not a crime. Eric in Worcester, Massachusetts. Go ahead, sir. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Yeah, I took some debate schools to classes in high school, and one of the arguments said you should never insult personally the person you're debating with. So by pinching that woman's butt, but you personally insulted her as well as assaulted her, and also the first caller when you can question his education, this is also a personal insult. You should debate about the facts and not personally insulting.
What do you mean about the first caller? What do you mean the first caller? I don't recall what the man.
It was about he doubted that he had college education or something. So that's a personal insult.
Well, I was saying that because I was wondering if he was going to be able to grasp what it is that I was saying.
I didn't think
he was too bright.
Well, that's exactly what you said to the man, too. You said, I don't think you're bright enough to understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's an insult. That's what this gentleman's saying.
Well, I think that if you are... That man that called wasn't... I wasn't going to get anywhere talking to him because he was obviously a hillbilly. Now, you, sir, sound more intelligent.
He was obviously a hillbilly. Why? Because he was from Virginia?
I was getting bored very quickly. Now,
that's the worst kind of argument that you can have in a debate. And you're teaching that for your kids? I mean, you know, that's not a rule of debate.
What do you mean, the worst kind of argument? What did I do? I said to the man, you sound like a hillbilly. Let me ask you, are you going to waste your time with someone that you can't get through to? I don't think you are. And so that was my point to him. Secondly,
I think it's not a good example for kids to physically assault someone that you don't agree with the debate.
Right. And that's the point we're making, among many other points, which you've given me about 500,000 more points when you said that you don't think civil disobedience is a crime. If it's done peacefully and non-injuriously, then it moves from being a crime to a non-crime. Thank you very much, Eric, for your call. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. 877-876-7445, as we're talking here with John Derunian. He's a high school teacher who lost a debate with a fellow faculty member. And this is a series, it sounds like a very good series, to be honest with you, that they conduct for the students where teachers debate each other. And the students are the witnesses, obviously. They're the audience for the debate, and they learn about debating styles, and they learn about the issues of the day. He lost the debate, and the student said, that was bad, it was wrong, and he said, how about some civil disobedience? They said, yeah, and he went up and pinched this teacher in the ass. I don't get it. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. Next hour, we've got State Senators Guy Barton and Kurt Quitty from West Virginia on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
We can't fight this fight alone. Give us a call. 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL. With me, Dr. Ron Tarner from Mountain Meadow Observatory. We have more of your phone calls, and this has turned into a, like I knew it would, this is a spirited debate on the global warming or global climate change topic.
Phil, there is nothing spirited about this. This is not a debate. I've just been accused and attacked as an intellectual. I would think that you would have come to my defense. You had a guy, and I shouldn't say you had a grease monkey,
All right, look, if you don't need to call him names.
What was he doing for 15 minutes but calling me names, saying that as a scientist, someone who has worked, I've worked my fingers to the bone. And I'll tell you something else. Let me ask you, do you believe that 9/11 was an inside job?
Of course I don't.
Why do you believe that?
Because we know for a fact that it wasn't. We know that the suspects that were on the plane were members of Al-Qaeda, these 19 individuals.
But what about the science? Didn't they say that the building was exploded from within by some sort of demolition?
We happen to know that that did not take place. There's been no physical proof of that. We by deducing that it would take months to wire a building that big to bring it down. Building 7, we know that that term, you know, we all of these things.
Okay, the reason why you believe that is the science is in. And the science is in on 9/11.
I mean, I'm not putting it very elegantly.
No, but I know, but the science is it, right?
Yeah, I would say the science is absolutely in, and has been in for many years, on whether 9/11 was an inside job. It is an absolute scientific fact, among other things, that hijacking and that series of hijackings and those murders were caused by these terrorists in Al-Qaeda.
Okay, you say the science is in on that, and you won't even give me the dignity that you'd give a starving man by picking the crumbs off of your plate in the morning from your toast and giving them to him. You won't even give me that, will you?
Give you what, man? You're not giving me anything. You said the science is in. I agree.
Well, then why don't you say the science is in on global climate change?
Because it's not. Plain and simple. And if it was, you guys would debate it, because the American people are confused.
Oh, well, why don't we debate whether or not the Earth is flat?
Hold on, man. The American people and the people of the world are confused, and you guys don't even give them the dignity. You don't even deign to talk to us directly, you scientists who say the facts are in. You won't even sit down and debate this. I mean, if it's in, you could kick the hell out of anybody that disagreed with you, but you won't even do that. You won't even do that. You won't even sit down directly and have a debate. The former vice president of our country, Al Gore, I can't believe he looks like such an ass when he won't even stand there and debate directly anybody that challenges this.
Okay, now you stepped over. You've just called Al Gore an ass. You have stepped over the line with me. And I would ask you right now to get off of your show. I'd like to continue this by myself.
Well, that's not going to happen.
You have stepped over the line. And I'm asking you to get off your...
It's not going to happen. 877-876-PHIL. Let's go on to a phone call here. I think we have Rosemary. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Dr. Ron Tarner. Go ahead.
Okay. First of all, I would like to say that the hyperbole on either side doesn't help anyone. It's, I'm sure, great radio. But I think climate change is a serious issue. And rather than talking the way we're talking, and I think the problem is that instead of the word debate, the word educate should be used. There are people that are going to believe whatever they want to, but with climate change, the issue is the planet's going to be here regardless of what we do to it. The issue is whether it's going to be habitable for us, whether there is going to be a place that's comfortable for not just us, but our children and our children's children. So
I don't know what's a habitable. That was the word of the race.
Well, maybe I...
Don't be, doctor. She said habitable, and you understand what she's saying.
Mr. Right, Henry, okay. No, I did not. It sounded like she was saying hobbit or something. I'm sorry. Forgive me, Matt.
I'm sorry. Maybe it was my southern accent that threw you off. Anyway.
Are you a doctor? Are you a scientist?
No, I write software for a living, but I read a lot, and I do believe that climate change is real.
Oh,
and I think
God,
the issue is, I think climate change
go.
Is actually real.
What?
I think the science is in.
Here we
but
go.
I think
will you allow the lady to talk, Dr. Tarner? Just because she's not a doctor or a scientist, this is exactly what we're trying to say. The average people of this country and this world have to understand this.
So long as she makes it clear she's not a scientist.
She's made it clear. Go ahead.
I'm not a scientist, but I think of myself as educated.
I'd like to draw people's attention to that statement. You're not a scientist. Thank you.
And she says she's
not
any... I'd like to... Go ahead.
If you would listen to me, you would find that while I agree with you on the scientific principles, I think that there is climate change. But I think that we don't do any favors to people by, I think the term's debate. You don't debate the theory of evolution there is with creationists, because why would you have a debate? One is fact, one is not. I think the issue is that you need to educate people about what...
Well, I want to answer that, Rosemary, because creationism and evolution does not have the divide that this has. I mean, you have over 100 years of evolutionary education. We don't have a long time getting up to speed on climate change, but we're told we have to believe in it. And there's a huge divide in this country.
Mr. Hendry? I'm the guest.
Go ahead, Rosemary.
Okay, but there, if you lived in the panhandle of Florida, you would think
that there is
a great debate and there was nothing subtle.
Okay.
But what I'm trying to say is, instead of being, with all due respect, Dr. Turner, by calling people names, it doesn't make people want to understand your position. And I think that the issue is that climate change...
That one guy... We still going up, but you heard the one guy who jumped cars for a living. Where's the lady? What happened?
Phil Hendry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Congressman Supak, you are one big piece of human.
You care about the starving millions of African people in this country.
You care about the farm workers.
Justice Stevens has courageously served his country from the moment.
Glenn Beck returns in a moment, but first, Chris Matthews, preview special report. Hi, Chris.
Brain. That's very tough to swallow.
Famous Phil Hendry Show, every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. This is the late night Truth Is Our Bitch news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Through the looking glass, the Alice in Wonderland journey of talk radio begins right now. The world famous Phil Hendry Show. Our website is philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com. Affiliate spotlight tonight. We welcome on board in Seattle, Cairo, 97.3 FM, and in Myrtle Beach, WGTN, 1400 AM, Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Taking a look at you guys. We appreciate it very much that you're a part of our network. A producer with the popular CBS reality series Survivor has been released from custody in the death of his wife, whose body was found dumped near the couple's hotel in Mexico. You might have heard this story. The body of Monica Beresford Redmond was found Thursday in a sewer at the lavish Hotel Moon Palace, where the couple had been staying with their two children. State prosecutors say the body showed signs of possible, and this is the state prosecutor in Mexico, possible strangulation, but they were waiting on the results of an autopsy to determine the cause of death. Her husband is 38-year-old Bruce Beresford Redmond. Has not been charged with a crime, but was detained Thursday for questioning, according to Bello Rodriguez, the outgoing attorney general for Quintana Roo, the state of Quintana Roo, where Cancun is located. Now, this man is a longtime reality television show producer. He works with the TV show Survivor. And we're going to bring on the line now Brad Rifkin, who is in the advertising business in Las Vegas, Nevada, but also has been involved in pitching and producing television shows for a number of years, and he joins us on a newsmaker line in Las Vegas this evening. Brad, thanks for joining us, and how are you this evening, first of all?
Well, I'm doing good, Phil. I'm sorry to hear the news of the miners in West Virginia. It's a very sad story.
It very sad, and a very poignant quote there from the governor on the journey ending.
Yeah, well, I thought so with the families. This story in Mexico is a different kind of story. This is a story about a producer, a TV producer. This man, Mr. Redmond, who is a producer on Survivor, he was also involved in some other television shows, Phil, some other reality shows that I'll get for you in a minute, but a number of shows, significant shows, so he knows the reality game. He also is a man who obviously is involved in producing reality television shows for a long time. So the problem, I think, and that I think the evidence is going to show, if
if this man did this, and we don't know.
Well, that's what I wanted to say. As a matter of fact, we mentioned that he has been released from custody. He was taken into custody, I guess it was yesterday or maybe the day before, when this young lady's body was found, Mrs. Redman, and the attorney general for the state down there in Cancun has released him, but he can't leave the country.
Right. So I don't know if this man is guilty. I can tell you, though, Phil, having been around television programs for a long time, the pressure of coming up with these ideas. Reality television show is a very popular, it's a very, very popular genre. People love to look at these reality shows.
We don't know if this guy's guilty or anything, okay?
No, I understand that. I understand that. But this is a significant story. From this standpoint, I know that Hollywood has a history of murder and associated crimes like that. And they aren't all committed by members of the industry. But the reality TV phenomenon is such a pressure-packed phenomenon. Producing these TV shows like this, Bachelor, Dancing with the Stars, American Idol, Survivor, on and on and on it goes. And you've got to come up with these ideas. So you're living with it all the time. I had said to Jim Carson, who's a very good friend of mine and of yours as well, and he does a lot of producing.
I know Jim, yeah. And he does a lot of reality TV show producing.
Right. And he said to me that, and he had been involved with this guy Redman on Pimp My Ride, which is a show that was on as well.
Right.
And he said to me that you live with it because the networks like the success of these shows. They don't cost a lot to make, and they make a lot of money. So you're living morning, noon, and night, a 24-hour clock of coming up with ideas, thinking up new scenarios. You're coming up with new documents on different scene structure all the time. If this man, Bruce Redman, had anything to do with the death of his wife, I'm telling you right now, more than anything, the culprit is not so much Bruce, is it's the show. And it is the, literally, the show itself becomes a living thing.
I hope you're not constructing some Twinkie defense here. You know what I mean?
I'm not going to say that this guy is not responsible for his actions. But I, you know, in a way, when you are living with a woman and you're down in Cancun, Mexico, and you produce a TV show called Survivor, and you're living with this television show, you may be on vacation, but you're living with this TV show. You know that come Monday, you're back in Los Angeles, you're back in staff meetings, you're back in programming meetings, you're back in a meeting with the network, you're back in a meeting with the studio, you're back in a meeting with the host, you're coming up with ideas. The doorbell rings, it's room service. You suddenly feel almost as if you are on the show. That in order to get immunity, you got to answer that door. She answers the door before you. You strangle her.
And what are you talking about? Are you talking about the actual show?
The way the show is structured, and people that are listening right now will tell you, the way the show is structured, the competition level is so high. The competition is very already real for the producers and for the advertisers. That if you're a producer and you're trying to take a week's vacation, and you have this reality television reaction that we've been talking about, where you suddenly you don't know if you're on the show or you're taking a vacation, and you feel that a knock on the door means it's immunity for you.
So you're telling me that Mr. Redman is suffering from some kind of a psychotic hallucination or delusion that he's on the show.
Look, Survivor takes place, this is what I'm telling you, Survivor takes place in very exotic locations, Panama, Borneo, Samoa. It's very possibly he thinks he's on a set of Survivor Cancun, or maybe he thinks he's on a set of the other shows, because he lives and he breathes that show. He's in a tropical location, you understand? Why do you think he picked a tropical location to go to for the vacation?
Well, I mean, I love Cancun. Everybody loves Mexico.
Yeah, I know. But if you're living it 24/7, you're in Borneo, you're in Samoa, you're in Panama, you're in these other... Why would you go there for vacation?
I guess you like it. I don't know.
You not only do you like it, but you live it. You live it. You not only like it, but you live it. Bruce hears a knock on the door. He thinks that he's on the show. Somehow he's going to get immunity if he goes to the door and answers the door first. The wife does. He grabs her by the... I don't know how. He strangles her and somehow throws her out a window or something. Now, this is a... I don't know what happened, but I'm saying to you, if that's the case, and it's very possible it is, do you really give a man like that the death penalty? Or do you give him the very best psychiatric care that you can provide him with and get him back on his feet? And this does not excuse the act, understand?
Well, if you say that the guy kills his wife as the result of some delusion, which is what you're talking about, right?
It's a delusional state, yeah.
Where he thinks that he's on the TV show Survivor, and he kills his wife, and he gets psychiatric help, and he's back on his feet. What does back on his feet mean?
I mean he's back on his feet where he is cognizant, he's thinking clearly again, his mind is not subject to this personality disintegration, these hallucinations, and he can be a part of society again and be a part of what he does so well, which is to create these very entertaining shows, and which, by the way, as I said, they don't cost a lot to make. They make a lot of money for the producers. This is a valuable skill. I don't know what people think of employees that they may have or other people that save their company money, but when you're a Bruce Redman or you're any producer who says, let's do a reality show where we can have, it's not going to cost as much because you don't have to pay the act. You're not paying actors, say, SAG wage. You're paying, what you're basically doing is you're paying amateurs who go on these shows and try to act like they're, you know, they try to act like they're actors, but they're not. And I know that there's been a problem over the last few years. They're telling these people on these Survivor shows and these other shows, look, just don't ham it up. You know, please don't ham it up.
Oh, they've mentioned that, huh? Because I know that's always been a pet peeve of mine.
Oh, yeah, they told her, will you stop hamming it up? But if Bruce is guilty of murder, there is no doubt that the jury should give him some psychological service and a very, very light sentence in a minimum security prison so he can produce more of these shows, so he can be a benefit. And that's all I'm trying to say.
Well, you're already presenting a defense for this man that has him walking free in a few years.
I don't know in a few years. I'm just telling you. If he did it, it's very likely it was the result of having been chained to this show for so long, this Survivor show, that seeps into your brain, seeps into your mind, that he thought he was on the show. He strangled his wife. And I have to believe that even his wife, if she could speak to us from beyond the grave, would say, you know, you can't blame Bruce. I understand why he killed me, and, you know, it's not a pleasant thing, but almost if she was speaking, if I were him, I would have killed me. You know, I don't know what...
Well, I wonder why he didn't commit suicide or something like that.
Because nobody on Survivor commits suicide. You understand it's a delusion? He thinks he's on Survivor.
All right, hold the line. Brad Rifkin with us. He's an advertising executive and a part-time, sometime producer for television. Bruce Redman, the producer of Survivor, one of the producers of Survivor, was arrested, taken into custody by Mexican police and released in the investigation of the death of his wife, Monica Beresford Redman. And it is Brad's idea or thought that if Bruce killed his wife, it was a reaction, some kind of a delusion he was under, that he was actually on the TV show Survivor and had to kill her. And it's a psychiatric condition, and he should be allowed to walk after psychiatric treatment. We'll get to your phone calls, and I realize that what we're laying on you guys basically is another Dan White Twinkie defense kind of concept. These things always leave me a little more than a little suspicious. Your thoughts and more with Brad Rifkin. We come back on the Phil Henry Show. 877-876-PHIL. 877-876-PHIL. The world famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry.
I don't know I said all of that, did I?
Yeah.
Wow.
Let me be as clear as I possibly can. There is no reason in the world we live in today, just as there was no reason in the world that people lived in 100 years ago, not to have a gun in the house, not to know how to use it, not to be as proficient as you can in the use of that weapon, not to know how to use it. No, there's no reason at all why people everywhere shouldn't own guns. Guns have been effectively elevated to the level of a black magic talisman that draw evil spirits. Well, that's not the case. I'm here to tell you folks, you'll be happy to know, that a gun is a collection of components and parts that does a certain thing if it's operated properly. To wit, if somebody's crawling through a bedroom window, you can blow their freaking head off with it. How about that? But you're made to feel ashamed, you're made to feel like you're a criminal, and let's not forget you're a right-wing gun nut. If you ask, may I exercise my constitutional right and own a gun? Yeah, nursing homes ought to have them, schools ought to have them, malls ought to have them, homes should have them, conceal and carry should be allowed on campuses. Oh, yeah. And this other argument that is about as feckless as it gets, which is the following. If everybody has a gun, it'll be a Wild West show. So what you're saying then, in other words, is you're affirming the superstition that the gun creates some voodoo that makes the person want to be violent. Is that it? So are we back now to video games create violence? Phil, back with Brad Rifkin in Las Vegas this evening. Brad, in the advertising business, the television business, a lot of different businesses. We have this man, Brian Sherman, and it's one of those stories, you know, that you figure you're going to see on Investigation Discovery. You know what I mean, Brad?
Oh yeah, it's got all of the earmarks of a Hollywood mystery.
What are the chances? I mean, we're talking about this guy, Mr. Sherman. What is his name?
His name is Bruce Redman. Bruce.
Oh, I'm sorry, Bruce Redman. We're talking about it like he's guilty, you know.
Well, no, I know that, but I don't know who did this. But I'm looking at these murders that take place with the wives winding up dead, and a lot of times the husbands do it. I mean, more often than not, the husbands do it, you know. Why do they do it? Is it because she went and she got pregnant? You can talk for years about the reasons a man kills his wife. And you might even have sympathy. I mean, I'm not saying murder is the way to go, you know.
Of course not.
No, but I'm saying if he hadn't killed her, you might have had sympathy. I should probably is what I'm saying. She got pregnant. It's the wrong time, you know. You're just starting to move with your career. You're just starting to move with a lot of things that you're going to do, and here she pops up pregnant, or she wants to move. She this, that. And all of a sudden, you find your hands around her throat, and you are throwing her through a window. I hate to say that. It's a horrible thing.
It's terrible. And the way you're putting it, he's not responsible.
The reason why I say that, Phil, is the nature of these TV shows. Look at the people that watch them. If the people that watch these shows think that they're actually in the show, look at the average survivor viewer or the person that watches that Pimp My Ride or, you know, whatever these shows. He thinks he's some kind of a jungle. He's a jungle man. You know, he's Tarzan. Well, think of what it does to the producers. And the producers sit there week after week living in the reality of Survivor so that when that door knocks, Or the doorbell rings, and it's a guy with room service. All he's doing is he's bringing breakfast, and you think you need to answer the door for immunity, and you don't know what's behind the door, and you find yourself with your hands around your wife's throat, and before you've even really awakened fully for the day, you've broken her neck. Why?
Because you think you're on the TV show Survivor?
Because you're the producer of the TV show Survivor, and you think you're on a TV show. You know, my wife looked like Stephanie, who was a contestant this season on Survivor, Heroes versus Villains. I don't know if you saw it.
No.
So I can understand how this murder, because my wife looked a lot like my wife, and you know Amy.
Yeah, she's beautiful.
Right, she looked a lot like Stephanie. And I there were days when I felt like I could, because I didn't like Stephanie at all. And I wanted to, you know, strangle her, but I wouldn't do it.
Well, what do you mean you wanted to strangle her? See, what you're doing is you're giving an excuse here.
I'm not giving an excuse.
Yeah, it sounds to me like you are. Let me go to a phone call here, because I want people want to check in on this. Our number, 877-876-PHIL. 877-876-PHIL. And here is Rita. Rita, you're on the Phil Henry Show with Brad Riff.
I was just listening to the show, and I've never done this before, but if Survivor produces murders, the show should be done away with totally.
That's a very interesting thought.
Well, we don't know that that's the case, though, ma'am.
We don't, but...
I know.
Saying,
he was just...
Lady,
he was, like, playing
saying,
it down his head. But,
well, I think what you're saying is... I love Survivor, but I hated Stephanie. Did you ever watch the show?
I said I liked
Survivor, but I hate Stephanie, who was a contestant on Heroes and Villains. Survivor, Heroes and Villains. I hated her. And I could see strangling my own wife because I hated Stephanie, because my wife looked like her. Now, that's dangerous. And if you, Rita, are you married?
No.
All right. If you're ever with a man or a husband and you look like a woman that's on Survivor who is one of these, excuse me for using the word, one of these bitches, you know what I mean, and the guy looks at the
right.
show and then he looks at you, and you, next thing you know, you're on your first date with a man who's got his thumbs on your Adam's apple. And you don't know, you know, why.
All right. Rita, thanks for your call. You're painting a pretty scary scenario here, Brad. 877-876-PHIL. We'll be back with Brad Rifkin and the story of Mr. Redman here in Survivor, the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Henry.
I mean, I didn't even want to scare or anything, you know.
Show.
877-876-PHIL is the number. Coming up, a mom says her son threatened Nancy Pelosi because of Fox News. Right now we have Brad Rifkin. Brad is with us in Las Vegas as we talk about the you know, the story here in Cancun, Mexico, of the wife of one of the producers, a television producer, and a man who produces, one of the producers of Survivor. His name is Bruce Beresford Redman. His wife, Monica Beresford Redman, she was found dead near the hotel yesterday. It's a terribly tragic story, Brad.
Well, and that's the point. I'm trying to anticipate here that if this was done by Bruce, you know, I don't want people to think the guy's an animal. I want people to understand that it's understandable if you produce a show, you're living with a show, and you're thinking about the show, and you're it's a jungle show, and you're in jungles, and you're in survival mode, and next thing you know, you've snapped a woman's neck while you're thinking about, you know, plot scenarios and meetings with advertising executives. I mean, that's how quick it can happen. And
well, what about the contestants? What about the people that are on the show? Do they go home? Are they going to live like this?
No. The contestants, I don't think, are a problem because they're actually playing. They're actually in the show. But the producer, if they go home and they kill someone, they don't have an excuse because, well, you were just in the show. Now you're done with the show. Now you're in reality. But if a producer who's never really given that outlet, he's got to sit on that chair behind the camera and watch as everybody else gets to be on television, and he doesn't get to. The pressure builds up to the point where you think you're on the show. Your mind has to be on television, and so before you know it, you're looking at a body laying at the foot of some stairs, and you go, "That's my wife. How did she get there?"
You think it was like that, huh?
I'm not saying it happened. If he did it, yeah.
So if you go before a judge, I mean, you're going to need a psychiatrist.
Well, yeah, I think any competent psychiatrist is going to see this as a post-traumatic stress disorder, having sitting behind a camera and not being able to be on TV the way these, you know, let's face it, a bunch of losers get to be on TV, and you don't, and you're a producer, that's going to cause post-traumatic stress syndrome disorder, and you're going to, so any psychiatrist that knows about it will talk to the court about it.
You're talking about PTSD.
Yes, sir.
877, so this man, the producer of this TV show, may be suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder because he is not on the TV show the way these other people are.
That is my belief, yeah.
877-876-PHIL is the number here on the Phil Hendry Show. Here is Todd in Hollywood. Todd, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead.
Yeah, his name is Brad Rifkin. Is that what his name is?
Yes, sir. This is Brad. How are you?
No, I'm Todd.
You asked me if I'm Brad. Yes, sir. This is Brad. How are you?
Hi. How are you doing? My name's Todd, and I've been listening to what you're saying, and I think that you're completely off base. Like with your statements that you're making, they don't make any sense as far as psychiatric conditions are concerned. I know you have a background in advertising, but you don't have a background in psychiatry. And he didn't suffer a traumatic event that would cause any PTSD. Basically, what happened is, the show may have been stressful, but I don't think he was jealous or envious or trying to get into the position of the actors on the show and feel like he was missing out, okay? But even, let's say, he was stressed out.
What are you basing that on? What are you basing that on? What are you basing that on? See, I worked in television.
I'm trying to prove that your assessment is baseless. You don't have any, you're just...
I'm telling you that I know when you sit behind the camera and you're looking at a bunch of losers that get to be on TV and you don't, you get stressed. Suddenly you transport yourself into the jungle motif.
You transport yourself.
That's what I'm saying. That doesn't make any logical sense. Like, all of us... Okay.
Right, well, are you a doctor, sir? Are you a doctor? Are you
neither are you. And that's what I'm saying.
I work in the medium, and I don't know what you work. I work in the medium. Do you work in the medium, at least?
In the entertainment business, yes, but not in television.
Yes.
Okay. But here's the main point that really irked me, that what you said is that he needs to be rehabilitated, okay? And once he's rehabilitated and is better, he needs to get back out there and continue producing his show, these shows, because that's what he's good at. Well, if him producing these shows caused him to kill his wife, then why the hell would he need to get back out there and do these things
anymore? No, I don't know. But I'm saying once he is made whole again and is not delusional about, he's not waking up and looking at his wife in a sewer. That's what I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. I think the man
Can I just jump in, guys? This man's not guilty yet.
Oh, then you're right about that, yeah.
I mean, we've got this man already killing his wife, and we don't know. But go ahead, Todd.
I'm with you on that. I'm not presuming guilt at all either. But like you said, we are presuming that he did do it, and the reason for him doing it was that this show had some contributing factor. The last thing that he needs to do is be in reality television anymore. He needs to start, joining a knitting circle or something.
That sounds, makes sense.
Well, you can laugh, Mr. Hendry, but this is what this man does, and I would hope that what we would do is rehabilitate him so that he's not, going loony.
Look, if you are so messed up that you kill someone, this is going to take some rehabilitation.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't. What do you mean?
Nobody's going to let him back in reality television. Look at what happened to that one guy who murdered, the Fiore girl. You know, and after that happened, I mean, people now the clearance to get in. You're not going to be able to work in that field anymore if you're guilty. You know.
Well, not if they rehabilitate him so that he's not going. For instance, Todd. If you and I were sitting together in a diner and I made you angry enough in this conversation that you found yourself suddenly, you broke my neck and I'm laying on a sidewalk and you don't remember how it happened, wouldn't you feel that you'd at least like to tell the judge that you went into some kind of a psycho state, and then they could, you know, fix it, and you'd be out?
What are you saying,
well,
man?
Yeah,
you just presented a hypothetical to this guy. I don't even know how you could answer that, Todd.
Well, he was about to. Let the man answer.
No. I mean, of course, a legal team is always going to, you know, pursue an insanity defense when given the option to do that.
Right.
You know, and blame it on a psychological state. And correct, that could, you know, get you out of, you know, having to do a long prison term or a death penalty. But on the same token, you know, even with rehabilitation, people are not going to let you back into a field that...
Into reality TV show, yeah. That's what your point was, Todd. It's a good point.
You're not going to get back in reality TV. Yeah.
All right, thanks so much for your call, sir. 877-876-PHIL.
Well, he didn't make his point at all. All right, I'm out of prison, and they say, you're the guy who strangled your wife. Yes, but I'm, you know, the old Laurel and Hardy line that people laugh at, but it's true. I'm better now.
And I remember what Oliver Hardy said. You're better now. He was being extremely sarcastic when he said that, because the fact is, how do you say you're better from murdering somebody?
If you didn't premeditate it, you don't know about second degree murder. They don't keep you. They don't put you in a death house for that. They let you out.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Moving on to another phone call here as we talk to Brad Rifkin about Bruce Redman and the death of his wife in Mexico. Adam, you're on the Phil Hendry Show with Brad Rifkin. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. I'm just not sure that standing behind the camera can create PTSD in a human being. I mean, PTSD comes about, as far as I understand it, when you're overpowered by something that's stronger than you, and you have no way out. You just have to deal with that idea and that feeling of being completely overpowered by something external.
Exactly.
And I'm just not sure that standing behind a camera, I mean, you may long and maybe even fetishize about being in front of the camera, but as far as that creating some type of stressful situation or some type of psychosis, I don't know. I'm not really buying that idea.
I will tell you, if I can explain this, Phil.
Go ahead.
I think Bruce has got to get back. Brian's got to get back to Survivor. It's a classic show, and it's a moneymaker for CBS. They can't afford to lose him. That's number one. And I'm sure the gentleman understands the nature and business when an idea guy for your company, and he's gone. But to sit there and have all of those great ideas, and I've known this guy for years.
You don't remember his name?
It's Brian. It's Brian. To sit there and have these great ideas, and then you're looking at losers that they picked out of a cattle call audition, and they get all the love, right? That's going to cause a man to, you know, you keep it in, and you keep it in, and you keep it in, and the next thing you know, your wife is laying under a car.
Right.
How did it happen? What happened? I don't know. Do you?
I understand that, man, but at the same time, like, PTSD is based around survival and survival instincts. Like you're in your survival mode and you're overpowered. So, I mean, but the thing is that this guy is such a great ideator or whatever he is, you know, standing behind the camera. But if he really wanted to be in front of the camera, then he and some of his ideating producer friends could come up with a team to get him in front of the camera.
A producer, it's not hard to get in front of a camera for a producer, Brad.
Well, if you're a good producer and you don't have an ego trip going, you're not going to put yourself in front of the camera because it's going to hurt the product. A lot of these producers want to stick themselves in front of a camera because they got an ego trip. But this guy is a good one. And so he sits there knowing I'm good, so I can't put myself in front of the camera, even though I know I'm better than these losers. I still don't want to do it, and now he's resentful. Because he's looking at one loser after the next, going on American Idol, and after they leave Survivor, they're on all these shows, and they write books, and they're in movies, and he's got to sit there, and he's got to suck on it, day in and day out, until finally that day arrives that his wife is sitting in a chair with no head.
Right.
Now that will scare the hell out.
What do you mean, no head, man? What is that?
I'm talking the violence of the... What is the gentleman laughing at?
They didn't find her with no head.
Did they find her in a sewer?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, that's better, huh?
I mean...
No, it's not. It's not better. I just...
I'm telling the gentleman that you need to understand. I know it doesn't seem like you could get post-traumatic stress disorder, you know, whatever they call it. But when you're in Hollywood and you're looking...
who's really hot, but she's not going to have sex with him. Which is the other thing, too. You get all these hot-looking women, and they won't touch you with a 10-foot pole, and you're a producer.
And that's going to cause PTSD.
Well, I mean...
Right. It sounds like the line of the argument is kind of more along the lines of video games causing school
yeah,
violence. You know
there
like,
you go. That, yeah, exactly. It sounds like an excuse.
Not so much.
It sounds like an excuse.
PTSD, but
thank you very much, Adam. We got to take a break. You see what the guy's saying?
No, I don't. What are you talking about? Video games cause violence.
It sounds like an excuse. It sounds like that lady saying that Fox News caused her son to threaten Nancy Pelosi.
Well, Mr. Henry, are you saying that outside environmental stimulus?
No, but we're learning now as a culture that we can't keep blaming media. And
this isn't media. He's there. It isn't like he's watching TV. He's there. He's looking at this piece of tail that he just cast in a show, and he's thinking, you know, we're breaking for lunch. I got the best trailer, and she won't come near it. Thanks a lot.
Well, you know what? I mean, I can understand what you're saying, but I don't think you call that post-traumatic stress syndrome, that an actress is not going to have sex with you because you're a producer. We're talking about Bruce Redman, the producer, one of them for Survivor. His wife was found dead in Cancun. He was brought in for questioning. He's been released, but he's been told he cannot leave the Cancun area. He cannot leave Quintana Roo, the state, in Mexico, where he was brought in for questioning because they may have some more questions. 877-876-PHIL. Brad Rifkin with us saying that this is the result of his post-traumatic stress syndrome of producing Survivor but not getting to be on the show. The world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Survivor, not your show.
I didn't say my show.
Yeah, you did. He doesn't have post-traumatic stress.
All right.
World-famous Phil Henry Show.
Our number is 877-876-PHIL as we talk here with Brad Rifkin, an advertising executive and television producer in Las Vegas tonight, about this very tragic story in Mexico, the death of Monica Beresford Redman, the husband, Bruce Beresford Redman, a 38-year-old producer on the TV show Survivor. We don't know. This man's not guilty. He hasn't been found guilty. He's been talked to by the police.
Absolutely.
But you were talking about this. If he were to be found guilty, he would have a good case in post-traumatic stress syndrome. And again, you've heard people say, you're a TV producer you're not on camera. Is that really that stressful?
Well, I'll give you an example, Phil. There was a contestant on Survivor by the name of Colby. Now, here's Bruce, what's his last name?
I thought you said the man's a good friend of yours.
Yeah, he's a very dear friend. Redman. I keep thinking of the maiden, he's got a hyphenated name, and this kid Colby is on the show. Now the kid goes on to go on Curb Your Enthusiasm, and he becomes kind of a star. And there's Bruce. You see, when you're a producer and you're stuck eating craft services, and there's a woman in the morning saying, "You want an omelet?" And meanwhile, Colby gets to go to his dressing room, and who knows what they got, some piece of tail that they got sitting there. So, yes. Now I can tell you, Mr. Henry, that the tragedy of this is that Bruce is on a TV show where they often deny people food. And I think that when the doorbell rang for room service, he felt he was in an episode of Survivor where he was going to win food if he answered the door first, and he didn't. And he twisted his wife's head like they, if you've ever seen what they do with chickens, all the way around. I don't know.
You don't know what happened to her.
Well, I can well imagine just twisted it, you know, around in a, like they do in a circle, if you've ever seen it in the movies. And that's the horror of this, you know.
You didn't see her. You don't know what happened. And to speculate like that is gruesome. And post-traumatic stress syndrome, because one of the kids on the show went on to become, he went on Curb Your Enthusiasm, to me, is it doesn't sound like a very professional producer.
But he said he's eating craft services.
All right, so he's got to eat craft services. I guess that's the lot of a producer. Here is Jim in Boston, Massachusetts, listening on WTKK. Jim, go ahead. You're on the Phil Henry Show with Brad Rifkin.
How you doing?
Yes, sir.
Just want to let him know.
How you doing?
All right. I just want to let you know that, Brad, you're so far off base from this, and you know, the message that you're really sending out is just it's really not, you know, that wise for what you're saying. Me personally, I do suffer from PTSD, and I'll tell you right now, it's definitely nothing related to from sitting behind a camera, and that's just clearly not something that would trigger PTSD. I mean, I don't know, maybe you should go down to, like, some of the veteran shelters and ask them guys if you compare what they're going through.
Oh, yeah, no, I know about that. Yeah, I did a movie once. Yeah, I did a movie once about a guy that had the flashbacks, and he went and he twisted a guy's head and everything. And
I don't want to hear about your movie, okay? We're talking to a gentleman here that suffers from this.
I'm saying that,
as far as your point you're making, it's completely, you know, insane. I mean, this guy, if anything, for the reason that he killed somebody would be, if in fact he did, we don't even know this, but if this guy didn't kill his wife over something like this, this is more of a delusional situation. Clearly nothing that stems from PTSD or anything relevant to that. If you'd even make that statement, and then to follow it up, you're rambling on about, you know, about him being back in the field and he's missing out on things. You're talking about a woman's death here. That's somebody's mother, their sister, their daughter, and your primary concern is that this guy's going to get back into the camera industry. If he killed this woman, you know, they should be filming him getting fried.
Camera. Yeah, but if he thought he was actually on the TV show Survivor, if he thought he was delusional, like you were saying, they thought he was on Survivor, and the next thing you know, he twisted it, you know, like they do with the head that goes all the way around. That's a sickness.
What is it with you and twisting the head around?
Because you don't know. I mean, I don't know how she died. But this gentleman I'm talking to, I'm very interested. Was you in a war or something?
Let's not be intrusive, okay?
I'm just curious.
I'd rather, if you don't want to talk about it, Jim, you don't have to. You don't have to talk about it, Jim. You don't. Believe me.
Well, I wanted to write a script about a guy that comes back from Iraq, and you know, and he has a flashback. See, and
You're talking about two different situations here. I mean, you're talking about something. What's he flashing back to? There's nothing even relevant.
He's flashing back to the piece of tail that he could have had that this Colby had. He's flashing back
with a post.
That's got nothing to do with pain. Exactly. I will be Phil Hendry show.
He's flashing back to a piece of tail that he can't have.
Exactly. He could have had. And there are pieces of
broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
A Democratic state representative from Manchester is under fire for apparently posting a comment on Facebook.
These very localized events become global counterterrorism.
Well, Bill, I understand your frustration. We open up our phone lines with categories.
It's the Jews, stupid.
Famous Phil Hendry show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. The news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what in the heck it's talking about. This is where truth is our bitch on this show, and we take you through the looking glass of talk radio. This is the world famous, not to be duplicated, Phil Hendry show. It's a talk show that other talk show hosts listen to, as a matter of fact. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. Our website, newly revamped, newly redesigned, with all of the archives and soon to have the full show logs, and we're very excited about our website with all that it has to offer. We've got our backstage pass fact, and I don't know, we had a lot of emails. We got everybody taken care of. So go over to the website tonight, look at our live streaming video and audio, check out the archives. If you don't have a backstage pass, get one. You cannot hope to understand or be a part of this radio show unless you do have a backstage pass. And this is the only backstage pass to a radio show, the only real subscription to any radio show you'll ever have that's fully worth it. And do I mean that? Oh, yes, I do. Oh, wow, do I ever. You can get some kind of a subscription to a radio station, to a radio show website that basically has coffee mugs to sell you and little five-minute podcasts and then a whole bunch of articles that somebody else wrote, right? Our show, our website is about radio, and we have full shows, full video casts, archives up the wazoo, Jack. All right, tonight on the show, Facebook, there was a status update on Facebook that landed a local New Hampshire politician in hot water. A man tells C-SPAN they take too many black callers. 877-876-PHIL, our affiliate spotlight tonight on Fresno, KJZN, Fresno, California, 105.5, Yakima, Washington, KBBO. Where's our big city? I'll tell you where it is, Detroit. And Detroit, Michigan is coming online with us. WDTW, 1310 AM, Detroit with us in early April. 877-876-PHIL. We're going to talk about junk food this hour with a guy that I don't know, Bob Green, who is our... he's really all things having to do with consumer-related items, things having to do with food. Robert Green, the CEO of Fraser Foods. According to this article from a local TV station here, Bob, in Los Angeles, if you feel like you're addicted to junk food, you may be right. A new study finds that junk food can be as addictive as cocaine. Junk food can be as addictive as cocaine. You believe that?
Oh, absolutely. We do believe that. And the way that we lay out our store and the way that we deal with our customers, the consumers, the things that we have on our checkout stand displays as well as in our aisles reflects that.
Now, in this article, it says the researchers say the theory is based on a study involving rats. It was published in the Journal of Nature Neuroscience. Although they can't be directly applied to human obesity, researchers say it may help understand the condition and lead to ways to treat it. The study found that overconsumption of high-calorie food can trigger addiction-like responses in the brain, and that high-calorie food can turn rats into compulsive eaters in a laboratory setting.
Well, you know, Bill, I have seen it with my own eyes. You can buy a child, we often saw at our store, you can buy a child a bag of these Skittles, or you can buy them one of these Reese's peanut butter cups, or these Reese's pieces, and you can see the way a young child, tears into that food without even thinking, and will continue to eat in a very, very compulsive way for a very, very long time. And this goes without saying. My own son has a weight problem, and as a result of the weight problem that my son has, it has affected his adult life to the point now where he has had a difficult time with mobility, a difficult time getting out.
Does he live with you?
He does live with me, yes. My adult son, who is 24 years of age. And that's why we have the picture of Bob Jr. In the store. I keep a copy of his picture with me. And we have a copy of the picture of my son at the checkout stands for the checkers to use.
Now tell me about this, because in your store you have candy at the display aisles, right?
Well, these are the checkout displays, yeah.
The checkout displays, I'm sorry.
Yeah, and there is candy there. That's where we have agreed to carry many of the big-name brands, whether it's Mars or Hershey or some of the smaller companies. But we don't allow young people to buy it, and by that I mean under the age of 18. And we have been known at times to actually ask for identification. We also do not let parents buy it if we think it's going to be eaten by a child. The compulsive child who runs up to the checkout stand and sees the candy and grabs it and puts it on the belt, that's the child that we really have to be aware of. I think all parents need to be aware of that child. He is the one, and we've all seen him, Phil, where he runs over to the candy rack, he looks at all the candy, he grabs the biggest, brightest package of the biggest candy bar or whatever, and puts it there on the belt. And that's when we have to come out from behind the stand and take it very politely and put it back.
So you're not selling candy to children?
We are not selling candy to children. We won't allow it. And that's why this is where the picture of my son, Bob Jr., comes in, where we have this picture, and I will take it, and I will show it to the children. And I will say, do you want to look like this? If we get any kind of an argument from the parents. Generally what happens is the child will go over to his parent after I've taken the candy off the belt and put it back. The parent will come over and say, why did you do that? And I'll say, because this is what your child is going to look like.
So you have a picture of your own son. How does that make you feel?
Well, I'm embarrassed. I'm embarrassed that I've got a son that is that size, who had I been a little bit more, had I been stricter with the way he made his food choices, he wouldn't be in the situation he's in right now. Sitting at my home, eating my food, obviously, with no job. So we have been the first of what I hope will be a great many stores to do this. Ultimately, Phil, what we're looking for is an absolute ban on the selling of candy to children, period.
All right, now you're talking right there about a ban on selling candy to children. You're talking about companies making a lot of money on Easter, on Halloween.
I understand that.
On Valentine's Day. And if you say you're not going to sell candy to children...
Well, we're not going to sell it directly to children. If parents are going to come in and buy it and take it home, and I'm not saying make it illegal. I just don't want to see a child buy candy in my store, and I have personal reasons for that, obviously. When I see a child buying candy, my thoughts go to my own son, Robert, and I think of how much weight he put on, and I project that onto the child that's buying the candy. I see that child as my son, Robert, and the bad shape that he's gotten himself into, and the fact that he is unemployed. And so it takes a little bit of control on my part not to get, I have to say, so angry when I take that candy out of that kid's hand and put it back. And I've had some confrontations with the parents who thought I was very rough with the child, but we're trying to save a generation, Phil, a generation of kids that are going to grow up to look like my son.
Tell me, if you could, how much does your son weigh?
He's 320 pounds. He is almost morbidly obese.
And how tall?
6'2".
And he doesn't have any kind of shot. I mean, there's offensive linemen, obviously, in the National Football League that are that size, but...
No, there's no muscle tone. This is obesity. And he's tall. His mother was tall. I am not. I'm 5'8", 5'9". He's much taller than me, much bigger than me. And I see him in every kid that comes up to the candy and wants to buy some. I see my son, and it's not a pleasant thought. I get angry. So, no, we won't sell candy to children, and we would like to see a prohibition on the sale of candy to children throughout the country, at least in stores. So if you want to buy candy for your child and take it home, and you want to watch your child turn into something that the rest of society is going to have to take care of.
Well, are you, Bob, you know, the rest of society is going to have to take care of. You're taking care of your son.
Well, these kids eating all of this candy.
No, I know that. The study says here that junk food is as addictive as cocaine. So a child going up to the checkout stand and buying all this candy, you're saying eventually leads to more compulsive buying.
Well, if you allow a child to buy it, if you allow only the adult to buy the candy, there might be some self-control there. There might be some restraint. But even when we see adults buy it, we will not sell candy to any adult that is accompanied by a child. We will not sell candy directly to a child.
So what do you do when the candy goes on the belt, on that conveyor belt? What do you do?
We have instructed our checkers. You go out from behind the register, you pick the candy up, and you put it back in the stand. If they take it from the stand and put it back in the belt, you walk around, you pick it up, and you keep doing that until they get the message you're not selling it to them, either with a child or with an adult with a child. And if they continue, then I bring the picture of my son, and I'll put it right in their face, and I'll say, do you see this pig? And I feel there's nothing that breaks my heart more than to call my own son a pig. But I will say to these adults, do you see this pig? Because that's what that kid you're with. And I'll point to the child, and I forgive me for using this kind of harsh language, but I'll say, that's what that's going to look like.
That's what that's going to look like.
That's what the child is going to look like. And 99.9% of the time we shake hands, and they realize it's been a big misunderstanding, and they are happy not to buy that candy for their child so it doesn't turn into this thing that I've got a picture of, which is my son, and I love him very much.
Robert Green with us. He has taken the step that some other stores are taking. He refuses now to sell candy to children. He also refuses to sell candy to any adult that is accompanied by a child. And he is calling for the prohibition of the sale of candy to children nationally because recent studies show candy, sugar, junk food sugar, is as addictive as cocaine. All right. let's get into this, because when you talk about prohibiting anything, man, it's a very, very, you know, it's a big, big, it's a tough road to hoe. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. And certainly having some kind of a, you know, carding kids for candy and taking it out of their hands and taking it out of the hands of the parents, this is a pretty aggressive policy there at his stores throughout the Southwest, Fraser Foods. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
And don't forget, tell your local station you want the Phil Hendry Show live. You want it live, baby. You tell your local station, you bother them with phone calls, you bother them with emails, you bother them with regular mail until they finally get the message. You want the Phil Hendry Show live on your local station. All right, 877-876-PHIL. With us is Robert Green from Fraser Foods, the CEO there of one of the larger grocery chains of the Southeast. The study released today saying that junk food, especially candy, is as addictive as cocaine, has led Bob and some other stores across the country to prohibit the sale of candy to children, directly to children, or any adult with children. And you have used your own son, who is, you say, morbidly obese, as an example to these parents.
Well, I have, Phil. I've had my own son come into the store. I've had Robert come in and sit on a stool between a number four and number five checkout stands for a good part of the day. And we will have a sign that he will either hang around his neck or we put it up near the candy stand that says, if you allow your children to continue to go over to this candy rack, this is what they're going to look like. And this is my own son. And this is a very...
That's got to be painful for you and for him.
It's painful for both of us, but I got no choice. I made a big mistake as a father, and now my son is morbidly obese, and I let these parents know, take a good long look, because as long as your child is bothering me and my checkers with candy that they should not be buying, unabated, they're going to wind up looking just like this. And we got an arrow, and we used two different signs at either side of the checker pointing to him.
877-876-PHIL. You're taking candy out of the kids' hands, too, aren't you?
Yeah, we go right up to the tray. If the child is at the candy stand the candy rack, and they're going to put the candy there, we will take it out of their hand. If we are behind the check stand, we'll go and take it off the belt and put it back. A lot of these children get upset, and that's not anything for us to get worried about because they're children. And I'm not really concerned with how they feel. I am concerned with how the parents feel. But I'm not going to allow the parents to buy candy for a kid that I already said no to. And of course, that's the other issue.
All right, 877-876-PHIL is the number on the Phil Hendry Show. Let's go to a phone call here, 877-876-PHIL. Daniel, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Robert Green.
Hey, Phil. Just want, you know, I love the
yes,
show,
sir.
And I like coming home at night and watching and listening to it. This guy, I mean, I don't know who he is and who he really thinks he is. I mean, this is, you cannot do this. I mean, this is, candy to children is just something that goes apart with growing up. And, I mean, to not,
maybe so does smoking cigarettes, maybe taking heroin. But no, we're not going to have you or your kid get fat just so the rest of society can pay for it.
No, I do.
Good point. 877-876-PHIL. Let's go over to Kathy. Kathy in Ashland, Kentucky. You're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, ma'am.
Hi. I was listening to the discussion about the candy police, and I just think that's totally
candy,
wrong.
I haven't heard that one before.
The candy police. sounds pretty apt, though.
I think one of the biggest problems with kids today, and the reason that they are so much more obese than they were a few years ago, is the constant use of computers, the constant use of video games. Kids used to get outside and be active, ride bikes, play games and so forth, and now they've just kind of, you know, dumbed down to just using their fingers, you know, and the rest of their body doesn't even get exercise.
That's nice. That has nothing to do, though, with what we're talking about.
Well, what she's saying...
No, I know what she's saying, but it's irrelevant. We're talking about junk food being as addictive as heroin, to the point where these children are going to keep packing these calories in, and it doesn't really matter. You know that no kid is going to be out there running 3 miles a day.
No, the kids did used to go outside, and, you know, I think parents...
That's fine. I mean, I can't go into your home and make your kid run, but what I can do is keep your kid from coming into my store and buying this food that is going to turn him into my son. My own son, my flesh and blood, which is over 300 pounds.
Okay. And I
got to be honest with you. I can't even refer to my son as him so much as I refer to him as it.
That's demeaning to him, though, and it's demeaning to you.
That's a comment that I wanted to make also. If I were your son and I was hearing you on the radio calling him a pig and an it because he has a weight problem, that would be extremely upsetting to me to think you have no more respect for me than that. I mean, that would terribly upset me.
I hear you.
That's wrong.
Well, I hear you, ma'am. I know how you feel. I'm out of options, though. Because of this unrestrained eating of this garbage that I sell in my store, I still sell it in my store. Because of that, he turned into this thing. Now,
and
I love him. He's my son.
Calling your child an object? Has a weight problem... And then you insult them on top of that, the only thing that's going to do is cause them to feel guilt, cause them to feel depression, and that's going to make the drive to eat the junk food even more. They need support.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I mean, it's neurotic, right, Kathy, is what you're saying. It becomes a neurotic thing.
Especially coming
from your own parent. I mean, if your parents are going to do that to you, where do you have to go?
Ma'am, forgive me, but you and Mr. Henry are giving these fat pigs an excuse to look like the way they do. Now, my son is a pig, but I love him. My son will always be, until he loses the weight, he's always going to be just a slug. But I love him.
I question that.
No. Excuse me, ma'am, but I love my son enough to put him on display in front of people and to say,
and
you
make
want
him
your
an
kid to look like that?
And make him an
what
embarrassment.
What does that do to... Does he go home and eat more?
I don't know what he does. I tell him, as soon as his shift ends, I say, get out of here. I don't know where he goes or what he does.
Well, Bob, there's money that says he goes home and eats more or goes someplace where you won't see him and eats more because of what you put him through.
Exactly.
And I say you and that lady... are exhibiting the kind of liberal political point of view that has caused this problem.
All right, Kathy, thank you so much for your call. We'll be back with Bob Green, not selling candy to kids, 877-876-PHIL.
Phil Hendry.
With me is Robert Green. Mr. Green is the CEO of Fraser Foods in Buena Park, California. They're headquartered in Buena Park. We're talking about his prohibition, along with other grocers, of selling candy to children. That is junk food at the checkout stand, these Skittles, these M&Ms. No more sales to them, as well as no more sales to adults who are accompanied by children. So you're not going to sell them candy. And you even have your own son. I want to get into the topic of your son here, if I could.
I didn't want to come on. I don't want to humiliate my son, but you asked me about my son.
You don't want to humiliate your son, Bob. I understand that. But you're having him sit between checkout stands with a sign around his neck.
That is correct, yes.
And you say you love your son.
I love my son more than anything. He is my life. But now I have to save his life, and this is the only way to save his life. And I'm trying to keep the parents out there listening to me tonight who have children that run over to that candy at the checkout stand. They run over to that display. They take the candy. They put it on the belt. The parents don't do anything about it. You might as well
take a copy of the photograph of my son that I have, take a copy for yourself, and put it up in your bedroom or put it up in your, because you're looking at your own kid. That's what it's going to look like, if that's what you're going to do. And bringing my son down to the store on Saturdays to sit for a couple of hours or with a sign around his neck that says, this is what it'll look like. I don't think it's going to...
The use of this neutral term, it.
There comes a time when your child has put on so much weight, you have to drive the message home to them. They have ceased. They are an object of curiosity.
Well, to me, it sounds like a freak show.
Mr. Henry, my son is not the Elephant Man, all right? I hear a lot of people thinking that I'm putting him on display like he's... If you ever saw this movie...
Yeah, I saw the Elephant Man, and it sounds a little bit like that, like you would put your son on display. I know that you're not trying to collect money because he's a freak. I think you're trying to illustrate something, but how do people know the difference?
I'm not standing there and going, I want my man back, you know, as Anthony Hopkins in that movie. Because I saw the movie where that guy's head was... I don't know if you saw the movie.
Yes, I saw the movie, and I read about John Merrick. It's a horribly sad tale, which fortunately has some kind of a happy ending.
What happy ending? On the Elephant Man?
I'm not here to talk about that, though, Bob.
No, but I'm just curious.
The story of the Elephant Man had a relatively happy ending. He became, he lived at the hospital. He got to know the Queen of England.
You call, well, oh, no, I thought you said they cured him or something.
No, they're not going to. They can't cure him.
Well, to me, that's the only happy... If you got a head the size of that, I don't understand. But the point that I'm saying here...
I don't... Get off the Elephant Man here for a minute. We're talking about your son being on display.
On display... So somebody else's kid doesn't turn into that.
877-876-PHIL, the Phil Hendry Show. Let's move on to another call here. Felicia in San Antonio, you're on with Robert Green. Felicia, hello.
Hi, I need to
yes,
tell
ma'am.
This man. Has he thought about how he is going to endanger his employees? Today's folks don't play. Over a bag of candy, someone can get so upset and come just blow someone away for a bag of candy.
We're
I mean, those are your
robbery.
Employees. Those are your employees. How dare you?
We're
now, you want to
armed robbery?
To sit
I'm not
going to.
The thing is, there's a cop. We'll call a cop if somebody pulls a gun. What would you do?
Well, we ain't got time to be calling the police today, sir. You need to take care of this matter in a different way. You need help. And you're using your
Wait a minute.
Son.
Are you telling me?
Your son to defend something that you permitted him to do when he was young. You know, you're out of your scope.
I did, but I don't anymore. I don't anymore. I've got to use him for
sir,
whatever good he can do.
Think of your
now he's too large.
A child protective service got to come and take that child from you. He needs protection now from you. Have a good evening.
He's 24, ma'am. What do you mean, child protective services? And to answer the lady's point, Phil, what? They got to pay for the candy bar first. If I don't let them have that candy bar, I've just saved them money.
All right, 8778, that's true, but I think what the lady is saying, taking candy out of a child's hand.
And someone's going to pull a gun on me? You know what, Phil, I will only respond by saying this. People can do whatever they want to do, but anybody that pulls a gun on me better be fast.
Well...
They better be quick. Better be real quick. Because I am 5'9", but I have very quick moves. Now, my son's mother was taller than me. I'll go ahead and admit that. She was 5'10", and she was the size of him. Does this give you an idea? Because, see, people are blaming me that I let him eat junk food.
You said that you let him eat junk food. Now you're blaming it on heredity?
No, I'm saying it was junk food, but his mother was pretty big. I mean, pretty big. For a woman, real big.
I don't know what that means.
She was huge. And I'm not...
Was she overweight? Bob, was she overweight?
I wouldn't say she was overweight. She was just huge.
So was it genetics or was it the fact the kid eats?
The kid ate, but his mother was big.
877-876-PHIL. I think that what the lady said, though, about the people having candy taken from their kids' hands, she made a good point. Mark in Berkeley, California, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Mark, go ahead.
Good evening. How are you?
Yes, sir. Fine.
I think it's very commendable what the gentleman is doing, having concern for other people's children. But listen.
Thank you very much.
One thing I have yet to hear him say is to blame himself for what had occurred to his son. Because, see, he had the ability to see it happening. You know, he saw this happening.
That is true.
It wasn't something that just happened overnight. So, I've yet to hear him talk about himself or blame himself throughout this whole show. He wants to give his son a label. He wants to berate him. But he should really berate himself also.
Well, I think it's a good point, but his mother was constantly enabling this behavior. She, as I said, was
Somebody was there in authority that saw this happening. You cannot tell me this. This whole show wouldn't be happening if whoever was in charge was doing their job. That's why I think.
Well, you're going to have to go talk to my wife. She's huge, you know.
Are you blaming your wife? Or are you I heard you earlier, Bob, say that it was your fault.
Yes, it was my fault insofar as I was also the boy's son. And I'm doing what I can now by having him come to work at the store.
What does he do at the store?
I told you what he does at the store.
That's what you call having him come to work at the store? He sits on a stool with a sign around his neck?
Mr. Henry, when you're 320 pounds, what, are you telling me I'm going to have to stock shelves or make a run for the, for the top ramen noodles? I've got him sitting on a stool, with a sign that says, "This is what it's going to look like if you let it eat the kind of food that I let it eat." Now, having said that, wherever his mother is, and God knows where that is, she's to blame too.
Wherever his mother is. All right, Mark, thank you for your call, sir. 877-876-PHIL. Let's go over to Timothy in Tucson, listening to us on KJLL. Timothy, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Hey, I love the show. I like to think that this kid should take his dad to a domestic violence class and put a sign around his neck and have him sit down there and say, this is what you don't want to become with mental abuse that you're giving that kid. You're not getting anywhere with him having him sit down in a chair. If you want him to lose weight and feel good about himself, make him do something productive at work.
I am, as far as I can tell.
Having him sit on a chair?
I mean, what do you want me to do?
Should we start putting pig signs on offensive linemen and security guards and law officers and everything else, too? Or
I don't know. I don't know. All I'm trying to do is keep kids from eating junk food so they don't turn into these monstrosities that we're looking at. Sir, there are news items every day now. Children in America are overweight. Children in America are fat as hell. They don't say that, but they say children in America are fat and get fatter all the minute. Every minute of the day they're getting fatter. What are we supposed to do? So I pick my son and I go, I made a mistake. I let my son eat Skittles and M&Ms. Now take a look at it. Do you want your kid to look like that? I don't think so. And that may be when I take the candy out of a kid's hand, the parent will think about how big my son is and won't want to, pull a gun on me like that other guy said.
I don't know. You're causing my kids a lot more harm than good. I can tell you that.
Ooh, my own son? He's 24 years old. But what else, he's living at home right now because his mother was fat. And I'm not kidding.
Are you saying it's the mother?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
What's that? I know. His mother.
Are you saying it's his mother's fault or your fault?
On balance?
On balance.
I'd say it's more his mother's fault just because she ate. There wasn't a plate of food that was on a table, and it could have been sitting in front of somebody else that she didn't think she owned.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Thank you very much for your call. Let's go over to Tom. Tom, you're on the Phil Hendry Show with Robert Greene. And this is changing, Bob. First you're saying it was the junk food. Now you're saying it's the size of the mother.
No, it was the junk food, but his mom is big.
Tom, go ahead.
Well, I appreciate you taking my call.
Yes, sir.
Man, I'm really distraught on this. My son was overweight for some years, and his mother is overweight as well. But I never in my life blamed either one of them. I mean, the parent's job is to make sure that you take care of your child and maintain what they eat and how much they eat. That's part of being a parent. So it's the parent's problem. Don't blame it on the candy bar. It's not the candy bar's problem. It's the parent's problem. Whether they get a candy bar at some other store, they're going to get a candy bar if they want it bad enough. They don't have to buy it at your store.
That's true.
Well, that's right.
So you're not,
but I can, at least I can say, at least I can say they didn't buy it at Bob Green's store. If I see a fat kid go, excuse my language, I see a fat kid go down the street, at least I can say I didn't do that. You know, somebody else.
No, you didn't do that. Whether you sell a candy bar or not, you didn't do that. That was the parents' fault.
Well, now, see, that's what you're saying what I've been saying. Your wife was fat, right? So you know it was more her fault because she's the one that shoveled all that food into it.
No, it wasn't her fault.
No, that's not what the man said. He said it wasn't her fault and it wasn't the candy bar's fault.
Why are you letting your wife off the hook?
Why am I letting my wife off too? Because she didn't make him fat.
Did you not just tell me that she's big too?
You bet she's big.
And how did she get big? How did she get big? Because she...
Hey, everybody gets big. Sometimes we have thyroid problems, and there's other issues involved.
There are... That thyroid problem is real.
Yeah, okay, it's real. Thyroid problems are real. Yeah, okay, it's real. And you know what? Someday we may discover life on other planets. But the fact...
No, thyroid conditions are absolutely real.
Well, but this gentleman wants to let his wife off the hook while she was sitting there eating comfort food, and she wanted somebody to eat with her, so it was the kid. You don't see that, sir.
No, you're incorrect, and don't put words in my mouth, because that is not what happened.
I don't know what happened.
I was overweight because of my doing and my
wife's
doing. It had nothing to do with anybody else.
More your wife's doing than you're doing.
That's what you don't understand. This man is saying he's not blaming his wife.
He's not blaming his wife, but he says it's her fault. I don't get that.
No, I did not. I never said it was her fault. It was
She was coming home with the big bags of the tiny Milky Ways. Didn't you say that?
No, he did not say that.
Well, then I'm hearing things.
Yeah, you must be hearing things because he never said that. Tom, thank you so much. Tom, how's your son now? Is he still overweight?
No, actually, he's a football player, and he's big. He's not overweight, but he's a big boy. I mean, broad shoulders, you know, big build.
Uh-huh, good.
This is Bob Green. Does your wife play any sports?
What is that supposed to mean?
No. I'm just kidding.
All right, no, that's fine. Thank you very much, sir. 877-876-PHIL. We don't need that kind of joking when we're talking about the health of children.
Mr. Henry, I don't see you not feeding kids candy. I don't see this gentleman. I'm the one that has prohibited the sale of candy to children. Me, Bob Green, the head of Fraser Foods, the CEO, I'm the one, me. So when people call up and give me a hard time and tell me that I'm the closest thing to Satan walking the earth because I tell kids...
Nobody has said that, Bob. What people are saying, though, is that you have to exercise the limits that a parent must put on a child. And to say, well, his mother was fat, so therefore that's why he got fat and I didn't do it. And then to put him on display in the store with a sign around his neck that says, this is what your kid will look like. I think there's some things you need to consider here. Robert Green with us from Fraser Foods on his decision to, throughout the chain, his store's chain, prohibit selling candy to children under 18. No more Skittles, no more M&Ms, none of the stuff there from the display cases at the checkout stand. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Henry Show, back with Robert Green in a moment. More of your phone calls.
His mother was huge. I mean, she was huge.
Famous Phil Henry Show. This is the world famous Phil Henry Show.
That's an interesting theory. I have Robert Green with me on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Robert Green, the CEO of Fraser Foods. We're talking up here about the study that junk food is as addictive as cocaine. You have no problem with humiliating a kid?
Well, Phil, what would you do?
I mean, telling a kid that he's a fat oaf?
Would you rather the kid die of cancer or a heart attack?
What kid is going to die of a heart attack from obesity? Look, the problem with obesity is that it gets worse and worse and worse. Don't you want to put that kid through some kind of a regimen that requires physical discipline?
A regimen that requires physical... You think you're running a training camp for the Green Bay Packers or something.
No, I'm not. I'm simply saying, don't you think it's more... it's going to get more results.
I'm saying to you that whatever keeps a kid alive, and more importantly, whatever keeps a kid from becoming a burden on society, when you sell a kid his bag of M&Ms and Skittles, that's one more step toward him becoming something in a hover round. And I don't mean to be...
What do you mean?
I mean, you've seen people that are so overweight. They are so overweight, they can't even be bothered taking one step. They don't want to walk. They'll just sit in a hover round. My son, and I'm proud of this, and I told him, you can eat as much as you want, but you will never, ever not take a step. You have to take at least a step, and then you can sit in your hover round.
Are you talking about those electric carts?
Yes.
Well, what do you mean you're going to have to take a step?
You get so fat that you just give up on walking.
I thought that those people were in those things because they can't walk.
No, they know how to walk. They just gave up on it.
8-7. So you're telling me you tell your son he has to take at least one step?
At least. Is that asking too much when I say to my own son, you are so huge. I mean, you're even bigger than your mother. I mean, I'm joking about it. His mother wasn't that big, but I'm making a joke. I'm trying to lighten it up. Because I remember that line from the op-ed Kono in Alien when he said, it's huge. You know, it's as big as a man. But I'm saying that my son, I say to him, you know, you want to sit in your little electric cart, that's fine. You have to at least take one step toward the refrigerator. You're not taking the whole trip over there in a golf cart.
877-876-PHIL. Let's go over to a caller here, Vera in Fresno, California. Vera, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, please.
Yes. I just, first of all, want to make sure that I get a chance to speak, because this gentleman seems to always be interrupting everyone that speaks.
Well, I know the facts.
Okay? Okay. So, no. Here's, in my opinion, you are being a hypocrite. First of all, you have a store where you sell candy, and you're saying that you want to help all these children, that you're out to help them, yet you continue to sell that candy. So if you really, really want to help somebody, you'd remove that candy off the shelf. The other thing is, here you
doesn't
are
work that way.
Talking and demeaning your son in that way. You can't even help your son, and you want everyone else to believe that you're really trying to help another child? The help starts at home. And if you can't help your own child, how can you help anyone else?
Ma'am, I'm helping my son. I told you that if he wants to use his hover round, he has to take one, at least walk a step. That's
no,
number one.
I get that.
Right.
But the problem is that he is so, you demean him so much that it is,
well,
it
ma'am,
is sad. It
do
is
you want your kid looking like that?
No, you listen to me. It is very sad that you're doing that to that child. Yes, he's 24 years old now. But you know what? You've demeaned him so much, and I only feel that you must have had a really bad life to continue that vicious circle that you're doing.
I've had a great life. The only thing wrong with my life is that I married his mother, and I don't even mind marrying. His mother was a wonderful woman, but she was, I'm telling you, she was way too big.
You must have been a wonderful woman to even consider you at all. But you know what? You go back
I'm the one
that first you blame your wife, then you blame yourself. You just have no clue what's going on. You must be in desperate need of attention or something, because you're hurting the child. Like I said, you're a hypocrite. You're a hypocrite, sir, because
no,
if you
I
really
have the candy in the store to help them get the discipline not to buy it. So if
oh,
a kid
please.
Sees the Skittles, if the kid sees
me.
The Skittles and says, no, I'll resist buying it,
no,
he gets
it's very obvious to everybody that's listening that you're coming across as the vicious
can I,
man.
Can I ask you a question?
No
let's
clue.
Let's get down to it. Do you
and
own
you
a hover round?
I
you own a hover round, don't you? You own a hover round. I know you do. That's why. That's why you're getting upset, because you want a hover round. Don't you?
Phil Hendry.